Hello, boys and girls. Welcome to the Cool Kids Lunch Table Podcast with PJ and Mike. Now find yourself a seat at their table.
Hey, kids, I'm Mike.
I'm PJ.
And today on the podcast, we're going to be discussing our favorite documentaries. So these are from years ago, decades ago, whenever we saw them. So these are just our favorites. There's so many. There's countless, PJ. There's countless ones.
Tons of documentaries.
So, but yeah, let's get things started. We're just going to go down the line. But as usual, we're going to start off with our childhood memory. So, PJ, what's the first documentary you ever saw or you can at least recall, whether it's at home or in theaters?
I would probably say, well, it was probably like a Behind the Music on my VH1. is probably what my first documentary was, because that was like, you could watch it on TV. It was like, you know, it was
people
really
you
cared
those.
About. I missed those too. It wasn't heavy to watch. It was like bands we liked.
Yeah.
You know, I think we must have watched in health class.
Yeah.
We watched the Sublime one like every time we had a like.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. What the hell was that teacher's name? I can't remember.
Mr. Maloney?
Yes, Mr. Maloney. He put on that Sublime documentary, Behind the Music.
Yeah.
It felt like once a week.
Right.
I think that was probably, or if not that, it would have been like behind the scenes features and stuff on like DVDs.
Exactly.
And commentaries and that kind of stuff.
Right. You kind of stole my thunder. That's why I had a backup. The only time I can really remember like, okay, this is actually like when I was older. Was like, oh, I'm watching. This is a documentary. Like, I'm really focused in on it. Was Super Size Me?
Oh, you know?
So that's when I was like, okay, I'm watching a documentary. Like specifically, you know, And for those who don't know what Super Size Me, that was basically the guy who ate McDonald's for a month. Every meal, nothing but that.
Yeah,
and it was like it's actually a really interesting thing.
Yeah, that's actually on my list of ones to talk about. We want to jump into it now since we're talking about it.
Yeah.
I thought it was. I thought that was really interesting because one, it seems incredibly dangerous.
Oh yeah.
Like people think about danger, like, well, he's not jumping out of planes. Like that dude ate nothing but grease for like, was it a month? I thought it was 30 days, right?
Yeah, at least 30 days. Yeah,
and nothing but like grease for every meal for 30 days straight. Like, didn't he have like issues from that?
Yeah, his name is Morgan Spurlock.
Yep,
that was the guy who started it and wrote it, directed all the jazz.
I know it was nominated for awards. I don't think it won, but it was nominated for awards.
But it changed. It changed fast food.
Yeah, like, it really did.
Because. McDonald's would have a thing. They'd be like, do you want to supersize?
They got rid of it.
They got rid of that.
Same thing. Like Burger King doesn't have the king size. They got rid of it. Wendy's used to have the biggie size. They're all gone now.
Yep.
I thought that was interesting when they came out with that because I'm a fast food eater. I love it. I love me some fast food.
Yeah.
And then you watch that and you're like, God, I really shouldn't do this.
Right.
And yet. I continue to eat.
I remember watching it. We're like, I forgot how he came, why he even wanted to do it. I think he just wanted to try it.
Yeah, I don't remember the whole thing.
But I remember like at one point he like throws up. He throws up. He just got the drive thru. He used to eat it for breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
3 meals a day he was doing that. Yeah.
And then he, I know there's a lot of controversy saying like now, like, oh, during the time he was like depressed. I don't know, whatever it is. But I know towards the end of the movie, he keeps going for doctor's checks.
Yeah.
And they're like, like his libido's down. He's getting like his like heart, like close to like heart failure.
Yeah, he was in bad shape.
But
he had a lot of mental issues after that.
Yeah, he gained
too.
Tons of weight.
Yeah,
you know,
they made a sequel.
Yeah.
I never saw it, but the name of it was Super Size Me 2, Holy Chicken.
Oh right.
But I never saw the second one.
Mm-hmm.
The first one though, I think maybe I shouldn't say that it's the first one that had an impact. On like the world, this is probably isn't.
Oh yeah,
but it was the first documentary I can recall that I would watch it and I was like, oh shit, and then it had an impact on America or the world or how things in the world were handled. I can't remember a documentary prior to this one that really had that level of impact that just like that was so popular and out there. Like, you don't usually see documentaries in movie theaters, but like this was there. This was spoken about everywhere.
Yeah,
this is the first time I can remember it.
Mm-hmm. One of my favorite things was I think it was like on the they had like extra scenes like on the DVD, where they take a regular hamburger that you would make at home and they take a McDonald's and they put them in glass jars,
right?
And they just let them sit there for
months.
The one you make at home like, you know, gets moldy.
It gets gross, yeah. Ugh.
And then the one from McDonald's fine. Completely looks exactly the it's same. Nothing changes. It's insane. Oh, my God. It's so gross.
So he had rules. Did you know he had specific rules he followed what he had to do?
I don't remember. So I remember he had rules.
Yeah, though. So these were the rules. He had to fully eat 3 McDonald's meals daily for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. He had to consume every item on the McDonald's menu at least once over the course of the 30 days.
Yep.
And he actually wound up doing that in 9 days. He ate everything on the menu in over 9 days. He could only ingest items offered on the McDonald's menu, including bottled water. Any outside consumption of food was prohibited.
Mm.
He couldn't. If the meal was... He had to supersize the meal if it was offered. Like, if it could be supersized, he had to.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember that.
Mm-hmm. And he had to attempt to walk as much as a typical U.S. citizen based on a suggested figure of 5,000 standardized distance steps per day. It says he didn't closely adhere to that, as he wound up walking more while in Houston, or while in New York than in Houston, probably because New York's a walking city.
Yeah.
But those were the rules he had to follow. So this guy really... had like a constant, like he made sure he did this in a scientific way.
Mm-hmm.
It was really something.
My favorite part is when he finally ends the challenge. Remember McDonald's used to have your birthday party at McDonald's?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They had like a glass door section or whatever. He like they bring out a cake that has Ronald McDonald on it, and like everyone's cheering for him. But yeah, I remember that. Remember those kind of parties at McDonald's? That was like a big deal.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if kids still can get the crowns at Burger King.
I don't know if they even do that stuff anymore.
This is like a big thing. I'm going to have my birthday party at McDonald's. These are the ball pits. They're getting rid of ball pits now.
Yeah,
like,
I don't think they have
anyway.
Them. Yeah.
But like those playgrounds at those places, those are like obsolete. But that was a big thing back in the day. But yeah, that's a great one.
Mm-hmm. On the 21st day of this challenge, he started having heart palpitations, and his doctor was like, "You need to stop, or you're gonna die." It's just crazy to do that. It's crazy to do that. Like, I understand trying to make a point. Imagine trying to kill yourself to make that point.
He probably didn't realize what was gonna happen.
Didn't even think of it. But that was a wild documentary. There's a couple other good food documentaries out there too.
Yeah, moving right along, I'm starting off with my favorite documentary of all time. It's called The Cruise by Bennett Miller. Okay. This is Bennett Miller's debut film, and this is the guy who made Capote, Moneyball, Foxcatcher. So he went to NYU, and he had a friend. He had a mutual friend. His friend's name was Timothy Speed Levitch. He basically worked at those tour buses in New York City. He was a tour guide on that. He would just speak on the microphone, you know, and talk.
Mm-hmm.
But he got the nickname Speed because he could ramble off historical facts, and he's like part comedian, part like Woody Allen, part like philosopher and like historian, like New York in general. But like it's only less than an hour and a half. It's really just more about just kind of like trying to find yourself, like post maybe college, or maybe during like trying to finding who you are, understanding who you are, kind of just getting the loss of abyss of just. Of like adulthood, what you're doing, and it's just you just kind of hear him talk about like ramble facts about New York City at the same time him just philosophizing and you know about himself and just like the cruise for him. The cruise means about like energy in life, like I'm cruising to find that next thing that turns me on, you know. And he says where there is cruise, there's anti-cruise. That could be like, you know, someone standing in your way like at a crossroads.
Right,
that's anti-cruise. So, but it's like a really beautiful film. It's in black and white. There's great music. It's all like classic composers like Schubert and I think Mozart's in it, Gershwin. You know, it's just really funny. It's like I said, if you like Woody Allen kind of humor, you're gonna enjoy it, you know.
Right.
Like, it's like an interesting narrative, you know. It's like I said, you just kind of and it's crazy to see because like this was filmed in '96, guys, or it debuted in '96, somewhere around there. And you see like he goes to the Twin Towers at one point, and he goes there and he takes his camera and he spins it like, and he's like, oh, it looks like they're falling. So it's almost like kind of very eerie, you know? But yeah, he just has some great lines, like just stupid stuff. Like he'll just say like, salvation is a woman's apartment. You know what I mean? Like these little things about like, and like, he'll quote like, you know, like he'll say like Greta Garbo would say like, New York City is the only place where I could be alone. So he knows all these random facts. And I actually met the guy.
Really?
I met him. Yep, I met him in 2012. I took my brother because I was like obsessed with this guy. I got his book. You know, it's called like Speedology, the Speed of New York. So like half the book is his philosophy of life. You know, right. Which is comical. And he talks about the history of New York City. You know, and it's just great. Like the Madison Square Garden, the guy who designed that is the same guy who designed the cake where the girl pops out of. You know?
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he talks about just all kind of cool facts like that. Where like. It was Broadway. There's a slight Broadway's not complete. All the streets in New York City are, you know, linear.
They're right. It's a grid.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. He talks. He has a whole section in the movie called The Grid Plan.
Yeah.
How he's against the grid plan, where he feels like it's confining us.
Right.
I mean, New York City cannot be confined, and it's somehow stuck to this grid plan. But anyway, Broadway's slightly little off because there used to be an apple tree there, and when they were building roads back in the day, they said, all right, leave it there. And
went around the tree.
Yeah. And do you know why Canal Street's called Canal Street?
Why is it called Canal Street?
Because at one point it was a canal.
There
right?
you go.
So, but he has like all that kind of random facts. But the way he shares it is so funny. And meeting him in New York City and doing a tour with him, not on a bus, just a walking tour. We did Washington Square Park and Bowling Green Park. He just knew. And at the end of the tour, he's like, if anybody wants, I'm going to hang out in this cafe. You could sit with me. So it was like me, my brother, like two other people. And I'm like eating like a donut with this guy.
Right.
And he's just talking about life. We're talking about this documentary he made like 15 years ago at that point. And he was such a cool guy. And he's made like guest cameos in certain films like Waking Life. And he's a very eccentric looking guy. But really cool. People that might like his voice could be kind of like high pitched, kind of talks like this New York. Maybe like little Pauly Shore esque.
Okay.
You know, if you took Woody Allen and Pauly Shore, you smush them together.
Okay.
But I love this guy. He's like one of my heroes. And I had the privilege of meeting him, taking a picture with him, having his autograph. And check out The Cruise by Bennett Miller. And this happens to be Edward Norton's. One of his favorite films.
Really?
The actor. Interesting. Yeah. That's how I got introduced to it.
Through Edward Norton.
I saw he was talking about his favorite films, and this is one of them. So I think I watched most of his films that he talked about, his favorite films, that I watched because I loved him so much, too. So anyway, The Cruise. Right. Check it out.
All right. So I have one on my list that's it's pretty recent in the grand scheme of things. It came out in 2017.
Mm-hmm.
It's a quick one. It's only 92 minutes, hour and a half long.
Okay.
It's called Batman and Bill.
Oh.
And this was on Hulu, so I think it's still there. I'm not 100% sure. What this is about, and again, I'm a comic book nerd, so everything I talk about is comic book related, right? But everyone who knows a little bit about comic books associates Batman as being created by Bob Kane. You've probably seen that name everywhere. Batman, created by Bob Kane. It's in the movies. You go to see like the 1989 movie, Batman, created by Bob Kane, is in the credits. Thing about that is, Bob Kane is not the only person that created Batman.
Aha, the plot thickens.
The plot thickens. There was a gentleman by the name of Bill Finger.
Mm.
When you think of Batman, just top of your head, what do you think of when you think of Batman? Like his look.
Like he's wearing the cape, the cowl, the symbol, you know, the Batmobile, of course.
That all comes from Bill Finger, not Bob Kane.
Wow.
Bob Kane's original look for Batman does not resemble at all what you know about Batman. Had like a red mask. It wasn't a whole. It was completely different.
Mm-hmm. Did he make the storyline? Is that what his?
I mean, Bob Kane, I think, is really the driver behind the story of what Batman is. He came up with the idea of him. Bill Finger came up with the look of him. He polished the idea, if you will.
Right.
Came up with the look that everyone's familiar with. Polished the idea that Bob Kane came out with. I think is the best way to describe what his involvement is. Batman is maybe the most popular superhero of all time.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy, Bill Finger, didn't get any credit for it. He did not get any money for it. It's a sad ending to that documentary. When you watch it, it doesn't end happily where you feel like this guy really gets the credit he deserved. He was he eventually would go on to get credit. And while it's not the most popular movie, I'm pretty sure it's Batman vs. Superman is the first movie
that has
him credited for having created the character.
Whoa.
Bob Kane eventually did acknowledge,
right,
we'll say, his involvement in creating the character. I don't think he ever gave him the credit he deserved, but he waited until after Bill Finger was dead to then say, oh, well, you know, my friend and co-creator really had a lot to do with everything. He didn't do it when he should.
Is Bob Kane still alive?
No, Bob Kane is also very dead, I believe. Okay. I don't think
you never
he
know. He could have been another
yeah,
Stan Lee.
Yeah, no, he's not. I don't.
So the documentary is basically about like how Bill Finger didn't really get credit. And it's kind of the journey of, like, I guess, getting the job.
Exactly. It's basically
what is this? Is it like through family members?
It's actually there was I forget the guy's name. Like, I'll look it up. I should know his name. I didn't have a lot of. I remembered the movie, so I didn't like take a lot of notes. But let me get it real quick. Basically, there was a person who was involved in the industry, and he wanted to prove, get like definitive proof that this is exactly what happened. Batman and Bill is an American documentary premiered on Hulu on May 6, 2017, directed and written, produced by Don Argott and Sheena M. Joyce. The film explores the creation of Batman, how Bob Kane was accepted as the sole creator, and how Bill Finger was never credited his work despite creating much of the Batman mythos. And, there's a gentleman, Mark Tyler Nobleman, as an author and speaker. He wrote a book, Bill the Boy Wonder. He's a comic book historian, if you want to call him that.
Yeah, yeah.
And he wrote a book about it, and now they made a documentary based on this book.
I see. Okay, cool.
And he was just trying to, like, get the truth out there. This one has a documentary about it, right? And you can watch how Bill Finger really created the Batman that we know. What's funny is this is not the only story out there in the comic book world about creators taking credit for more. Stan Lee, we all love Stan Lee. Mm-hmm. Stan Lee took a lot of credit for a lot of shit he didn't do.
Yeah.
And everyone still loves Stan, and Stan is like the godfather of comics.
I think Stan's a little bit more like he came up with an idea and someone else kind of developed it. Kind of like a Steve Jobs.
Yeah.
What's that thing with Bill Burr? I need all this in this phone. And everyone else does all the work.
Yeah, like, exactly.
He comes up with the idea and then someone else does all the heavy lifting.
Exactly. So and he gets all the credit.
Yeah.
That's exactly what happened with Stan Lee, and it's very similar to what happened to Bill Finger. If you're a comic book fan or a Batman fan, it's a great watch. It's not like it's hard to watch it. It's not long.
Yeah.
It's very interesting. Like I said, it's very sad. Being creative is hard.
Mm-hmm.
We say that as people who try to be creative every week when we put out a podcast. It's not easy to be creative.
Mm-mm.
And to be so creative as to come up with all the great ideas behind Batman and then not get credit for him is a heartbreaking story.
Yeah.
So I put that one on my list.
Nice. That sounds great.
Mm-hmm.
My next two, I just put two, I'm doing these two at the same time because it's the same guy. Same, Michael Moore.
Yeah.
So it's actually his first film. It's called Roger and Me.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one I wanted to talk about briefly is Sicko. Because I feel like those two don't get enough attention.
Everyone always talks about Fahrenheit.
Fahrenheit 9/11, and then also Bowling for Columbine.
Yep.
You know, which is an amazing doc. And both of those are really good. I actually never seen Fahrenheit 9/11, but
I saw Fahrenheit 9/11 in the theaters with our buddy, with Dan.
Wow.
Yeah, we went to see that in the theater.
But I need to check that out because I really like his stock. And I know people like, obviously, look, these are documentaries. They're gonna have a political doy. You've seen it from his point of view. But I think these two films in particular are like I said, just don't get enough attention. So his first one, he won awards for this one. So people are like, okay, what's Roger and Me? So it's his first documentary. Came out in 1989. It's about what happened to Flint, Michigan after General Motors closed its factories and opened up new ones in Mexico, where workers were paid lower wages than American counterparts. Roger refers to the title Roger B. Smith. He was the then CEO and president of General Motors. And all I can say is, man, when I saw this document, I was like blown away. It is so good. It's so heartbreaking. There's a lot of good, like, we know how music sometimes can like change the tone of a scene. Mm-hmm. And like this one point in the film, like spoiler alert, while they're closing down, like, cause look, I'm not sure geographically, I'm pretty sure it's very close to Detroit, Flint, right? Because Detroit should be called Detroit Muscle, because of the muscle cars. And now we know how Detroit is, unfortunately, very, It's a new Gotham City, I guess.
Yeah, for real. Speaking of Batman, they need a Batman over there. Yeah.
So there's one point in the film where this guy's like, he talks about how it's so heartbreaking. He you know, he loses his job, and he's like, I'm on my way home from losing my job, and the Beach Boys song comes on, Wouldn't It Be Nice? And he's like, I just remember hearing that song, and they play that song, and he's talking about all this awful thing that ends up happening to him, like what his house and all this other stuff. It's, and that movie's, and that song is like the, you know, they, you know, the complete opposites of, like, he had this happy song with this terrible thing happening to this man. It was just like so powerful, but it's so, so good. So if you're a person who's very into cars and you're like, what the hell happened to the car industry in America? It started there.
Yeah.
It started, and this is 1989. And look, I, in my opinion, American cars aren't really what they used to be. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, you have your standouts, Doi, you know, but you don't really have, like, what used to be, like the top when it came to cars. Now, it's like all the Japanese cars are the best cars. Your Hondas. Your
absolutely.
Toyotas.
That's why I drive a Hyundai.
Right, exactly. That used to be, like, you know, a thing. And like I said, and there's other documentary that came out in 2007, which I feel like does not get enough spotlight, is called Sicko, which is basically, it's just an examination of the American healthcare system.
Yep.
And it focuses on other healthcare systems around the world. And it, like, I know, look, he does a really great, and look, I think Roger Moore has a really good sense of humor. Roger Moore, this is
Michael Moore.
Michael Moore, he has a really good job of being really funny in his films. And I think this is, like, of all those films that I've seen, this is probably his funniest.
Okay.
Because you're following people around the world and their healthcare. Some are, unfortunately, some pass away. Not from the American healthcare system, just other healthcare systems. But just one older gentleman in the film, his journey was, like, cracking me up. You know, I mean, sort of, he passes away. Not that he died is funny, but this guy, he's like your grandpa. He's just, like, full of life, still working. Well, that's the thing, is, like, why is this man still working as an elderly man?
Right.
Because he can't afford healthcare.
He needs the healthcare. Yeah.
But it's so good, and like I said, and just to kind of what he examines, I'm not going to give you guys a history lesson here. I mean, I have my bachelor's degree is in public health, but you know, if you want to think about healthcare real quick, PJ, it goes by like these three things, not any specific orders. It's affordability, right?
Yep.
Can I afford this? Is it quality? Like, is this good quality healthcare?
Right.
And last thing is accessibility. Can I actually get access to it? So he basically does those three things.
Okay.
You know, whether it's going, because people talk about Canada. Oh, they give out free healthcare. Well, it's not technically free, you know, but everyone has accessibility. That means everyone has access to it, right? We have better healthcare than them, like in terms of quality.
But not everyone can get it.
Right.
Not everyone can afford it.
Exactly.
Right.
So he goes around the world and he goes, well, what? Maybe I can help America. So he goes to these different countries and speaks to doctors.
Right.
Because people say, oh, in Britain, like, how much money? You make nothing. And like, he's like, and you pull up to the house, it's like a mansion. they have like BMWs, Mercedes Benz.
Right.
Like, oh, we're doing very well here. And like, one doctor talks about, like, he's like, yeah, maybe you make, look, I'm just throwing out numbers here. You might make $200,000 in America. I make 190, you know, like, you know, in terms of, you know, currency, whatever. But it's like, they just talk about, these are just myths, because they don't want you to, say, health, especially insurance companies, don't want you to, you know, change things. And it's really fascinating. And like, it's kind of like, and I guess the funny part of it is, he, as you're following these throngs of these different people, at the end of the film, he goes, I know there's a place in America where we can get quality health care. Guantanamo Bay, you know? So he actually takes them on a boat, and they're trying to actually get on to the, you know, to the base itself. And he has, like, a megaphone. This is what people, like, everyday people on a fucking, like, rowboat, basically.
Jesus.
And they're going, like, the Coast Guard comes out, and like, what are you guys, like, what are you doing?
Right.
He's like, we're here for the free health care. Because all the prisoners there get, like, top quality.
Yeah, they get good health care, yeah.
Insane health care. You know, so anyway, it's a really, really good thing. And if you hate Michael Moore, you don't like that he's liberal, blah, blah, blah. But I got to say, you know, those films in particular are like really, really good. You know, and there's a part where he talks about George Bush with Sicko. But it's really more, I don't want to say it's really more about George Bush. It's really more about, like, which is any, like, you know, you have all these lobbyists.
Right.
And like, you know, during his era, there was Medicare Part D, which we had to pay for subscriptions, which was a, that was new.
Right.
And in the movie, they talk about, like, the idea was to try to make things lower, but ended up increasing things. But it's a really good thing. They talk about 9/11 at one point, because you talk about 9/11 funds.
Yeah.
But it's great. So check out Roger and Me and Sicko by Michael Moore. They're really good.
So when you said Michael Moore, I thought you were going to talk about Fahrenheit 9/11.
Is that on your list?
It's not on my list. However, there is something on my list that does go back to 9/11. It's Loose Change. You heard of Loose Change?
No.
The best way to describe it, I don't want to call it, it's kind of like a conspiracy theory. Like, you know, they're going through this to try and tell you, like, it just because the news is telling you what happened.
Yeah.
Right? There's a lot of things that don't make sense about about the attack.
Right.
Right? Why did this building fall the way it fell? Why did this... And it's like a touchy subject, right? Because, like, obviously, it is probably in our lifetime, it's the biggest thing that ever happened on American soil in terms of attack or terror or war.
Real quick, PJ, have you you have Instagram? Yeah. Have you noticed like the 9/11 videos? Like I feel like all of a sudden, this is April. I feel like they've been more prevalent in my feed. Not that I purposely searched, but they've been more graphic.
Yeah.
We all seen the, you know, I'm not trivializing this, the planes hitting the buildings, but like, I keep getting ones now, like, you know, people are sadly jumping out of buildings.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
why am I getting this? And why is it able to, I can't post anything on Instagram without taking it down, but you have this
and it's fine.
Horrific things. It's fine. Yeah. But have you noticed that though?
Yeah, there's been a bunch of stuff
like,
coming up.
More intense feeds? Because I see in the comments, people are like, why am I getting this more graphic stuff all of a sudden? But anyway,
and interesting.
Yeah.
I think, I don't know if it's because of this documentary, but I think of other documentaries like this. Like I said, that was probably the biggest thing in our lifetime that's ever happened. Like, we don't.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
of course.
And I remember being in school when it happened and all this shit, right? And look, like you said, it's not to trivialize it, but I'm a believer, and I don't like to believe everything that I'm told by the media.
Right.
I'm not a conspiracy theorist, right? I'm not, you know, what is it, QAnon, all that shit? Look, some conspiracies are fucking crazy and just stop.
Right.
But there was some stuff about that didn't really add up.
Right.
And I think this documentary, and there's been multiple iterations of this documentary. They continue to re-edit it and put it back out with new information. And I'm not saying it's right. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying what they're saying is true or not. Mm-hmm. I just think it's always good to see maybe another side of things. They do talk to people in the military. They it's not like they're not talking to people.
It's not like
they're walking up to some like crackpot on the street and saying, "Hey, do you think this is fit?"
Right.
They do speak with you know,
like engineers. I'm assuming building people.
Right. Yeah. They have
experts.
They have experts on there that they're talking about, and they basically tell you, like, look, some of this doesn't add up. And I'm not saying that this is
like an inside
job. Or anything, but something. There's more to it, and I think whether or not you believe there's more to it, I think it's a good idea to always keep yourself open to hearing the new ideas, and you don't often see these sort of I don't want to use the word story, but these sort of ideas on a big big platform, because they want to hide. They don't want to publicize. They don't want to make a big thing out of this and like cause mass hysteria. But I mean, there's just there's always more than one side to a story, and I think Loose Change does a good job of asking those questions. Maybe they don't answer them, but they ask them.
Right.
And sometimes that's what you need. You need to have questions about things. And it's compelling to watch. I mean, you might hate everything they're saying and you might disagree with all of it and you might think it's bullshit. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. But you won't turn it off once it's put on because you'd be like, I want to see what they say next.
Right. Yeah.
And I think that's the point of a documentary sometimes. It isn't always to give you the answers, but it's to ask the question.
Absolutely. And PJ, you're right on point, because I was just about to say, too, like, I think also with documentaries, it's like, I think, it's like, well, I'm not going to agree with what they say. I'm like, well, that's why you should watch it.
Right.
It's like, see something for a different perspective. It doesn't mean you have to like it or agree with it. Just see it from another lens.
Yeah.
You know, that is about changing your mind. Just be like, okay. To win an argument, you should first understand both sides of the argument.
I mean, the Earth's not flat.
Right.
You know what I mean? So,
right.
But this is the thing. Like, the Earth's not flat. And these people come out here with their crazy conspiracies.
Yeah,
yes. The Earth is flat and there's an ice wall, so that's why we don't fall off the
Right.
All right, listen, you're crazy. Stop.
That's not grounded in reality.
Right. And that's why, like, when people start saying, oh, it's a conspiracy, that's why these conspiracy documentaries and whatnot get a bad rap, right?
Yep.
Because some people are like, the earth is fucking flat, and it's not. And now a real documentary that does a good job of presenting an alternative idea gets shot down or looked at in a negative light because of the crazies. Some of it, some shit's shady out there, and someone's gotta show you why.
Yep.
The truth is out there.
Speaking of the truth, PJ, this next one I love, and I was at the edge of my seat. The King of Kong, A Fistful of Quarters. Have you ever seen this 2007's? This is a documentary basically about this guy named Steve Wiebe versus Billy Mitchell. Basically, this guy named Steve wants to set the new record for Donkey Kong.
Oh, yes, yes, the arcade. I did.
And this was, folks, when I don't know what area I saw this, but I was on the edge of my seat. I watched this at home. I was, like, flipping out because you want to talk about, like, Kong versus Godzilla? This is it, okay? This is the real Kong versus Godzilla. Because, and look, this came out 2007. Now, ever since that documentary, that guy Billy Mitchell has been exposed as a fraud, as a cheat. You know, he's a real piece of work, that guy. And he's the type of guy in this doc, you hate him. You hate him. You know what I mean? Because he's like, cocky, just all these different things. But anyway, the movie is just basically about this journey of this man who's like, I haven't seen in years, but like he gets really good at Donkey Kong, clearly. And then he's like, I'm trying to beat this record, you know? They just kind of get him out of a funk out of his life, right, and try to win something, you know? And back then, like 2007, it is a long time ago now, but like you didn't have all these like Twitch streams, all of a sudden you didn't have the sophistication. So like to record how you beat like an arcade, like getting, you know, they call it like I think it's called like maxing out or blacking out, like in an arcade. So like it's when you play so many levels, like on Pac-Man, where the machine kind of goes like glitches when
it doesn't know what to do anymore.
Yeah, it goes back to like level like -0 or something like that. Right. Where, like, you can't accumulate any more points anymore. Like it just like goes to black. So anyway, he keeps setting all these records, and this guy Billy keeps beating him. He's like, "How is this possible? Like, I just come like," and so he goes like, "I cannot stand the competitive edge." But it's like he's doing it almost effortlessly. And the documentary is about him going to these competitions, and like he's getting like number one. He's growing up the ranks.
Right.
And there's this thing online. I think it's still around. But after seeing this film, I was like, I don't even believe it. It's called Twin Galaxies, which basically it's like the Guinness of World Records of like video games, you know? So it could be like arcade games, stuff like that. So I'm assuming it's still around. But basically the thing of Twin Galaxies, they were also like, you know, doctoring, you know, scores and like playing favorites, especially with this guy Billy Mitchell. Right. And you find that. So look, you don't have to like video games. You don't have to like Donkey Kong or Pac-Man to like this film. If you're a type of person who's really against like corruption, cheating, going like, what the hell's going on here? You know, like literally good versus evil. This is the film for you. It's so, so good. Like I said, you don't have to like video games to really enjoy this film. Like if you're into competition and like I said, this movie is really more about corruption, not just like on the competitive side, but how records are kept, how things are like even like compared to like the Oscars or some of that. It's like, how is this doesn't count. Like everyone knows this guy's cheating. It's full of baloney. Why are we still considering his records legitimate? You know, and you're letting these other people in. So into the Hall of Fame, I guess, of video games or scores. But it's so, so good. The King of Kong. It's really good.
I think you'll like the next one. I don't know if you've ever seen it, and if you haven't, I think you should. It's a documentary from 2012. It's called A Band Called Death.
It sounds familiar.
So there was a band called Death. And they were a punk funk sort of band. It was three brothers, three black brothers that created this band called Death. And they're maybe the beginning of punk, right? Like one of the first punk bands. They don't necessarily make it big, right? That's why they don't really go anywhere, although their music I think is very influential to other bands that have become popular in that genre. It's like I said, it's about these three brothers, the David, Bobby, and Dennis, I think his name is, Hackney. Mm-hmm. And they create this band after seeing, you know, they were a funk group, but they see a rock show. I don't remember who they saw. I don't know if it was The Who. I don't know. They saw rock bands in that era, and they start to incorporate that rock into the funk music they were playing, and it kind of becomes punk. And they, at one point, were working with Clive Davis. And I think everyone knows who Clive Davis is, right? But he's like a legendary producer. And he said to them, you're not going to make it big if the name of your band is Death. You got to change the name of the band. And they refused. They said, the name of our band is, we're not changing it. We're Death. That's the name of the band. He stopped supporting them because he's like, I can't make money off of this.
Wow. And, but I give him credit, though. As a businessman, he's right, though.
Yeah, no, he's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
same,
basically,
I would say same for the band Butthole Surfers.
Yeah.
They probably could have made a lot. It's not, you can't market that name. Name an album Death, then. You know what I mean? Right. Makes you happy, you know?
Especially then. This is what, the 70s, right? Exactly, it's not the way it is now. You could probably be a Death now is probably nothing,
right,
compared to what else is out there. But you know, you're talking about
bands called I Hate God and all this other stuff.
Right, exactly. You know, this is a band that was in the 60s trying to get big in the late 60s, early 70s, and he's like, you got to change the name or you're not going to be commercially successful, and if you're not commercially successful, I can't support you because what am I going to do? And this documentary is really about, they found some of the old records that never got released and, you know, trying to put them back out into the world. And if, you know, if you're into music and just, you're someone who's had bands has tried to make it in bands and, you know, you've had success, but some people haven't. So it's, I think you would like the documentary, but I think anyone who's into music would really like, it's again, a band called Death. I think it might be on Amazon Prime maybe.
Yeah.
I watched it when it first came out, which was 2012. I don't remember where I watched it, but I'm sure it's out there in the world of streaming. The music, they're fantastically talented musicians. Like they play the music on there. If you've never heard them, I mean, listen to them, you'll be blown away. But I just think, you know, I think it's a good one. I think music documentaries, like we said, the first documentaries we remember seeing were music documentaries on Behind the Music. This is, a much more in-depth version of a Behind the Music on this, on a very little-known band that maybe should have been, would have been bigger if they just made a couple of different decisions.
Cool. Yeah, that sounds really good, man. That's a good one. Yeah, my next one, guys, is called Carts of Darkness. This came out in 2008. So the reason, I don't even know how I stumbled onto this. It's I found it on YouTube. So it did premiere at, like, you know, the Canada Film Festival in 2008. But yeah, I found it on YouTube during the pandemic. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
nothing else to do. Just watching everything. Yeah.
It's about like an hour long. But anyway, it's by Murray Spile. I think I pronounced his last name. So basically, it's about a group of homeless men who live in, in the city of North Vancouver, who use shopping carts to collect bottles and cans to return money and also race down the streets for thrills. That's like their fun time.
Right.
But, man, it's like a really good film. It's really a good examination of like the homeless. It's not like, I mean, like, is there sad parts? Yes. This is like a depressing film. It's like, oh my God, life is awful. Right. No, this is more like, it's interesting. It's like it talks about like, how does someone, like, how do you become homeless? You know, like, how do you end up homeless? You know, like, so that's really interesting. Some of it is by choice, which is really interesting. People who have mental health or substance or, their life of crime kind of thing. You know, but it's really, really good, and it's just really interesting, and like it doesn't really go into heavy politics or anything. They talk about like the guys. I've had worked with social workers or programs, and they talk about shelters. So it's really interesting, but it's like really funny, and you know, I guess the parts where you have, this isn't like Jackass with them going down like the shopping carts, but the part that's really interesting about it is the filmmaker himself. He used to be a skateboarder, and then he ended up getting into a car accident, so he's in a wheelchair now.
Oh, wow.
So he can, like, really relate about, like your whole life changes. Like, my old life is done, you know? And, like, just like some of these guys talk about, like, yeah, I had a regular, normal life, and now I'm poor. I have nothing. Right. So it's, like, really interesting how he talks about that. And at one point of the film, like, this is, like, don't want to spoil this. I am. So, like, they put him inside of a shopping cart. Okay. They're pushing him around. It's, like, really sweet and, like, really bonding moment. But, and I think, you know, we think about the homeless. We think they're violent people. And sometimes when they're using substances, they can act out on that. But most time, they're just really sad stories, you know. And the ones who chose to be that path is mm-hmm. really interesting. So it's only an hour long. Check it out. Yeah. Carts of Darkness.
Carts of Darkness.
And it's on YouTube, so it's free.
Oh, it's free. It's even better. Mm-hmm. I had one more, like, mm-hmm. movie documentary on my list, and yep. I had a couple of TV shows that are worth watching that are documentary.
Yeah, I have, like a lightning round.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But everyone knows that I'm a fan of Kevin Smith and his work, mm-hmm. And that I saw Clerks, and that's why I wanted to go to film school and all the stuff. I've spoken about it. Not that long ago, there was a documentary made about him and his journey into becoming a filmmaker. It was called Clerk. Mm. And I actually saw this.
Singular.
Just Clerk, period, is the name of it. I saw Clerk in New Jersey. Kevin Smith owns a
shop, right?
He owns a shop, but he owns a theater
too?
Mm. He owns a couple of theaters. He has a small, I wouldn't even call it a theater. It's almost... We're in the store. It's mm-hmm. probably not even as big as the store.
Right.
It's a very intimate setting that he has there. It's called Smod Castle because the name of his podcast was Smod Castle. So mm-hmm. this is Smod Castle. And we had gone there, and I didn't actually know what we were going to see. It was an event that he was throwing for certain people. You had to be in. You had to buy a ticket. You could only get a ticket if you were in the. Like the Kevin Smith fan club mm-hmm. that he has, and I bought tickets. We didn't know what we were going to see. It was just, you're going to see something.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. we were like, all right, well, I'll see whatever. You know, I see all the stuff anyway. Mm-hmm. And it happened to be this documentary that was made by Malcolm Ingram, is the guy mm-hmm. who made the... And it's about his life and his career. It's not like it's anything heavy to watch. But if you're someone who really wants to make movies...
Yeah.
I always say this. I know a lot of people don't like his movies. They don't like his work. They may not find mm-hmm. him funny. They don't like the language right. he uses or whatever else. I get it. I don't know that there was anybody else in movies that was as self-made, really,
yeah.
as Kevin Smith is with Clerks. And this goes through his, you know, he sold everything he had like to get some money. He sold he maxed out every credit card he has
yep.
to try and get Clerks to happen. But this movie really shows like, all the things he had to do to be successful, all the risks he had to take, you know, all the people who he had to believe in him, mm-hmm. right? Because it wasn't enough for him necessarily to believe in himself.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
he
yeah.
had to have support. And it just goes through and they interview some of the other actors and stuff that you're familiar with in his movies. Like they talk right. to Ben Affleck and Matt Damon and all that because they did have, you know, big mm-hmm. parts of his career. It's really interesting if you're a fan of his work. It's put together well. It's easy to watch. It's funny,
yep.
as you would expect something about him to mm-hmm. be, because they show a lot of the jokes and how they came up with the jokes, and it's heartfelt because he talks about the people that he needed to rely on. It's really yeah. really a good movie. Mm-hmm. He's in it. The criticism of Kevin Smith these days is that he's not real anymore and he's just always a character.
Mm-hmm.
He definitely comes across as more of a real person, I think, in this documentary. He's not as over the top. I don't know where you can watch it these days. I think you could probably buy it online.
Mm-hmm.
You could probably stream it like on
yep.
maybe like mm-hmm. Apple TV or wherever. I'm sure
right.
it's there. It is really an interesting look at how he became who he is and just certain things like Jason Mewes, they talk about, you know, the character of Jay and Jay and Silent Bob is based
mm. yeah.
solely on how that guy lived his life. Like, it
right.
wasn't, he didn't
right.
create that character.
Right.
His
right.
friend Jay is that character in real
yeah.
life. And he talks about how he had to take that and how he made them, how he became a character in a movie that made him a
yeah.
huge star. And, you know, you realize he does that it takes a village to become
oh yeah
a hugely successful
you
director.
Reminded me of there's a book by Robert Rodriguez
mm-hmm.
the guy who made like you know
yeah.
He
made a lot of things but yeah,
yeah.
He
mariachi
did, mariachi yeah
Desperado but he has
yeah.
a book I can't it's like so it's like one man cameraman something mm-hmm. like that one
right.
man movie you know but he talks about him like how to break into the movie
yeah.
industry and how like he's another one kind of like him like rags to riches
yeah
like, you know he's like a one man army too so. Really interesting. Yeah, good ones.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to think. I have a, like I said, I have a couple. You know what, I'm gonna start my lightning round. Yeah. Okay, PJ. Yeah. So my first one is called. This one's a little bit more on a depressing note. It's called Body of War. So I feel like a lot of my documentaries are from like the early 2000s, but this is 2007. It's about this veteran named Thomas Young. So basically, it's about, you know, after 9/11, he wanted to join the military. You know, and basically his first day in Iraq, he gets hit, he gets maimed, and he becomes like a paraplegic. You know, and it's like his journey of just like going back to America, jeez, like. And it's like, oh, man, it's really heartbreaking, but he's also trying to, you know, get his life back together. But it's called Body of War. So, like, it's really, really intense. It's really good. Another one, a little bit more lighthearted, is called Bronies, the extremely unexpected adult fans of My Little Pony. So this came out in 2012. This is such a joy to watch. It's basically, it's about men who got into watching My Little Pony. So, so basically, the woman who made Powerpuff Girls, she ended up getting hired to make, which I love Powerpuff Girls, she got hired to make My Little Pony, and at the time, My Little Pony was very big in the 80s, yeah, the TV show was like shit, you know, a lot of those 80s shows were like, most of them were just shit.
This is like a reboot.
Yeah, this was like a reboot, and like, the show was a hit, you yeah, know? And like, so I guess like, the internet was like, especially men were like, I'm going to bash this thing, and then all of a sudden they watched, like, oh, this is actually good. My niece used to watch that show. So, like, Pinkie Pie and Rainbow Bright, and there's, like, a good villain. The guy who plays Q in Star Trek, he does the voice of Discord. He's, like, I guess he's a villain in the show, or, like, a wacky horse character.
Right.
But anyway, it's a great documentary about fans of, like, My Little Pony men and how they go to different cons. And there's, like, a couple of storylines that you follow throughout. Like, some are kind of come from, like, a sad place, and some come from a good place. And it's really interesting. It's cute. All right. So, Bronies. And my last one on my lightning round is called Ecstasy of Order. It's about playing Tetris. So there's multiple storylines. And I might get me mixed up with another documentary about Tetris, but there's different storylines. And one of them is like how Tetris actually got made, which is an amazing story. They made movies recently, which is amazing. It's about like the Russian mafia got involved and the Russian government and all this other crazy crap. But there's mentally, in one of the storylines in Ecstasy of Order, they talk about. These guys are, this is a competition, you know, for like the old school NES Tetris, you know. So you're watching these men and women get preparing for that tournament, but then there's a legend, and that legend, the guy's name was Thor. Can't think of his last name, but his story is like super interesting. They should make a movie about him because, you know, remember back in the day, used to have like the Nintendo World Championship.
Yeah, yeah.
He was like the guy. He's like the guy, and he's, I think his record still stands today for like being the best for Tetris, you know, but. Anyway, in the documentary, like, everyone's like, hey, you ever met the guy? Why doesn't he compete anymore? But anyway, when he was a young man, when he was, like, 12, 13, he actually had to support his family. So, so part of that argument is him, like, kind of talking about, like, how he had to support his family and the pressure and, like, you know, being on TV. And, like, he was, like, kind of like a socially awkward guy to begin with. But it's a great documentary. It's really – it's not sad or anything. It's really just interesting and fun to watch. So, yeah, Ecstasy of Order.
Nothing gives me more anxiety than Tetris.
Nah.
There's nothing about that game that I find relaxing.
Is there anything in your lightning
round? Yeah, I have a few for my lightning round. One is a TV series on Vice. It's called Dark Side of the Ring.
I was going to say my things I would talk about for like recommendations at the end.
Oh, all right. Yeah. So yeah,
those are great, man.
Oh, my God. Is this not the best show?
The best one was, in my opinion, was Owen Hart.
That one was great. That was unbelievable. I mean, I love this show. The Owen Hart one's great. The Montreal Screwjob one is great.
Yes.
The
Macho Man was
the
good.
Macho Man.
Those three are unbelievable.
Yeah, there are some crazy ones. There's a Jake the Snake one that's just
heart-wrenching. Yes, yep.
That one, the Chris Benoit two-part one.
Oh.
Oh, my God.
I forgot about that one.
Wow. Wild.
And the great thing is you don't have to be a fan of wrestling to find them interesting.
No,
it's unbelievable.
They're told so well.
Unbelievable.
There are so many. I can go through every single one, and they're all good. The Plane Ride from Hell is, I don't know if you've seen that one.
No.
There was a flight. I forget exactly what year the flight was on, but all of the wrestlers were coming back from like wherever they were. Mm-hmm. And this plane, they were all on the same plane, and they all go fucking nuts.
Right.
They're like whipping their dicks out and shit. People are getting fired from the company after it because they're like, assaulted. Wow. Ric Flair got like canceled after this episode came out when they heard about him like whipping his shit out and flipping it around at like at like his flight attendant. It's fucking nuts, dude. You're like, what is going on?
There's a whole episode just on that flight.
Just on this one flight. It's madness.
I'm not laughing about the sexual harassment, but I'm laughing that they made a whole episode just about this flight. That's how much
wrestlers
shit happened.
Got like fired. People right. got like, people got in trouble. It was like big thing.
What year did that flight happen though?
Let's see.
Gotta be early in his career. Or
hold
something.
On. No, it was not
really?
Early. Yeah.
Oh, I felt like this was like maybe late 80s.
Hold on. I will tell you when the plane ride from hell happened. Hold on. There's gotta be a. Here we go.
It's gotta be in the 90s.
2002.
What? Wow.
Yeah. There was a pay per view in 2002. I think it was 2002. Hold on. Let me see. We will find out right now. But the idea. I'm looking it up. Aftermath. Here we go. The plane ride from hell. This was in 2002. They flew back. There was an insurrection pay-per-view. It was called Insurrection. They did it in London, I think, or somewhere in England. And this was the plane ride back to America from that. And
makes sense. You got this long flight. Yep.
So all the wrestlers were, they were doing whatever drugs they were doing. They were drinking. It was a mess. Just like, people were like physically fighting on the plane. Like, Brock Lesnar was like attacking people on the plane and Ric Flair taking his junk out and making the flight attendants grab his junk. I don't remember exactly what happened with Kurt Hennig. He got fired from the WWE after it.
Wow.
Yeah. Like that. Remember he made that comeback for like, he was like a surprise entry into like a Royal Rumble. And all of a sudden you're like, oh shit, Mr. Perfect is back. After this, he got like fired. Scott Hall got fired after this when he was making his comeback. It was wild.
Wow.
I can't explain to you this episode. Right. It's the best one of the show. Mm-hmm. So if you have an opportunity to watch that show, check that out.
Dark Side of the Ring.
So that was one of the ones I had on my rightning round. 30 for 30.
Yeah. Yep.
30 for 30 has a lot of great sports documentaries. Those are all fun. Yep. Mm-hmm. I think they had an OJ one that was pretty good. They had one about the Islanders. There's a sordid history about the Islanders, about how unlucky they've been with management and how this guy, like, I can't even go into detail. It's so much, but watch the Islander 30, one.
30 for 30. Yep.
And then the Price is Right documentary, Perfect Bid. You ever see this one?
No.
So there's this guy who created a database. He didn't cheat. He really didn't cheat. He created a database and like studied the database of the prices of everything that's ever been on the show.
Mm.
So now he knows the prices. He memorizes all this shit. He would go in the crowd. He was trying to get on the show, but you don't know if you're going to get called down. But while he was waiting, he would give the answers and he would shout out like the answers. If something was going to cost $1,262, he'd be like, $1,262. Eventually people caught on that he knew all the right answers. So they started listening to him.
Wow.
So they were getting all these perfect bids. And then he got on the show himself and he was able to get all the answers. And like he would win everything because he knew, like when it would do like the showcase showdown at the end, he knew the price of everything, all the trips, all the cars, everything. And he didn't really cheat.
He just did his homework.
And they had to like change the way they do it on the, how they do the stuff on the show and find different. I don't know. It's really interesting. The fact that this guy was able to like outsmart the Price is Right.
Mm-hmm.
And that's on Netflix. It's called The Perfect Bid.
I got to check that out.
Oh, dude, it's great. It's great. You'll like it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I might have had The Toys That Made Us. I know we talked about it
before. Oh, that's a great one.
So if you're into like toys you grew up, like the Power Rangers, Ninja Turtles, they're
He-Man,
so good.
The He-Man episode, the Barbie episode, they're all good.
Like I said, I think I said this in the past multiple times. The best episode, in my opinion, is the Barbie one. That's the movie they should make.
Yeah,
the making of Barbie.
Yeah,
that's incredible.
For real.
There's a cute one on Netflix. It's called American Gladiators. I think it's like
4 episodes.
Watched
that one. That was
cool.
A good one. Yeah.
It's cool. It was interesting. It was funny. Remember this on MTV? MTV True Life. It'd just be like
a
series.
Yes, yes, yes.
Those are cool, man. Those are like maybe an hour long, I think.
Yeah, it was always like True Life, and then like
I'm a wrestler.
True Life.
I'm gonna get surgery. So like, those were really great.
Those were good. The True Life ones. Yeah.
PJ, I just want to talk these two real quick things. So, when I saw it, remember This Is It with Michael Jackson?
Yes.
That's the doctor. So I saw that in theaters. And the reason I'm bringing it up because I just thought this was cool. At the end of the movie, they play like, I mean, the movie, they play a lot of music, yeah. But at the end, they play like, This Is It, the song.
Yeah.
So it wasn't many, it wasn't a packed theater, you know, but my brother and I were in, we started together. We started dancing at the end. Dude, everyone started dancing. That was great. And then this other one is, so I saw two Stones movies in this, Rolling Stones movies in the theaters. I forgot what, I saw Shine a Light. They filmed at Beacon Theater. And I saw, that was called like, Rolling Stones, like Cuban Nights, Havana Nights or some shit. Anyway, those two Stones documentary films, you know, they're like basically concert films, right. But behind the scenes crap. Those, The Dark Knight and Star Wars Episode One are the only movies where I was like waiting to get into a theater where people actually like, yo, I'll buy your ticket to see that film.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I thought that was just so cool. Like, you know, I was like, yeah, with Star Wars, people were literally, you know, begging to see that movie
because
that
no one wanted to be the no one wanted to not
after
see
that,
it first.
Yeah, yeah. And after that, you know, after the first
no one
no
wanted
more.
To see anymore. Yeah, right? It wasn't a problem. But
The Dark Knight, I remember that being a huge thing. I remember like waiting on like white line just to get in. Yeah, and people be like, "Yo, I'll buy your ticket." But in the Stones, yeah, the same thing. I never experienced that. That's another thing. They, someone came up to us like, "Yeah, we'll pay it tickets." Yeah. We're like, "This isn't the real. We're not seeing the concert,
right?"
Like, and that's like they're in person or anything, but. But yeah, people really want to see movies. But
you know what? You know what documentary made me ugly face cry?
Mm.
I cried like a baby, and you're gonna laugh when I tell you what it is. The Mr. Rogers documentary. Won't you be my neighbor?
Right.
Dude,
right.
That thing. Oh man, Mr. Rogers might have been the greatest human being to ever be on this planet. That's that's not even
very
a hot take.
Yeah,
that's just
common.
Fact. He is the best person to ever live on this planet is Mr. Rogers. Mm-hmm. That documentary was fantastic. When you just realize how good of a human he is, like the mailman. The hell was the mailman?
Oh yeah. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. And they were. He was like, no, this is the mailman on my show, and it was. The mailman was a black, not the mailman, the police officer.
Right.
The police officer, I think it was, or whatever, and. He was a black guy, and they didn't want him on TV, and he was like, no, he's going to be on TV, and then he invites him to go into like his little kiddie pool with him, and they're like dunking their feet in the hot day, and like just when you realize like he didn't care about like when you talk about people that will like embrace other people's differences and accept people, no one did that better than Mr. Rogers. And there was one scene where there was people's differences, a disabled kid, I don't remember his name, he was on the show, he was like, I don't know, quadriplegic, whatever, he couldn't move, he was in a wheelchair, and he wanted to meet Mr. Rogers. So Mr. Rogers like, well, of course. And then a million years later Mr. Rogers is getting some sort of like lifetime achievement award or something, and you see this kid in the movie when he's a kid on the show, and you're like, this kid died the next fucking day. Like he's
right.
You know what I mean, like this kid's dead, right. Like he just didn't make it, there's no way. A million years later, Mr. Rogers gets this lifetime achievement award. And they fucking roll this kid back out.
Wow.
And you're like, oh my God, this kid's still alive. Mr. Rogers is crying. The kid's crying. I'm crying.
Right.
Everyone's
wow.
crying. It's so good. I think they talk a little bit about that. It's a famous thing that he did when he was trying to get funding for PBS. And he gives that speech to I guess, whoever it was, the Senate or whatever.
The Congress. Yeah, whatever it was.
And
yeah,
they were
that.
Like, we're not giving these motherfuckers any money. And Mr. Rogers talks, and they're like, okay. Fine, you can have all the money you want. That's it. We won't fund the army. We'll fund you. Mr. Rogers won that battle.
When I think that Lifetime Achievement Award, he says a speech that's so moving. It's really great.
Yeah.
Check it out. He talks about gratitude, like being thankful. It's, oh, man. And he does like this 10-second pause to like think about people who have passed or not.
Yeah.
It's really beautiful. Yeah, he was an amazing human being.
I went to Pittsburgh once to visit our buddy Ruben, and Mr. Rogers is from there. And there's like a big Mr. Rogers like statue and stuff there, and we went to see that. But Mr. Rogers was always great, but I mean that documentary, so moving, so touching.
Yeah. But folks, PJ, great list of documentaries, and all these, check them out. These are beautiful films. There's so many documentaries that I want to get to. I haven't gotten a chance to, but yeah, we'll definitely revisit this
absolutely.
In the future. But yeah, check these out, folks. And you know where to find us. Same time, same table.
Have a good one.
Boys and girls, lunchtime is over. For more information, visit their website at coolkidslunchtable.podbean.com. Follow the boys on all social media platforms. Just search Cool Kids Lunch Table Podcast. Now get to class before you get detention.